Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Honored to have you along as we get together for conversation each and every day. And wondering today, if maybe you've thought about this, would you share your faith more if you were more confident about your faith? We'll talk about it today and see if we can build a firm foundation for what we believe in a way that will help us to share it with others. We are entering into this significant week in our church calendar, and it should be maybe an opportunity for us to engage in some spiritual conversations. We're going to get some insight on that in today's program. And Ted, I don't know what you think. If you were more confident in your faith, you think would that make a difference in how you share or you brought it up more?
Oh, definitely. I think so. You know, some people may be even overconfident, though, and that can kind of rub people the wrong way if you come on too strong. So it's kind of a fine line, I think. Just yesterday, I was in church. I took a photo at the end of Palm Sunday, you know, waving the palm branches and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had this moment of hesitation. Do I post this or not? And I'm like, well, why not? Sure. So I went ahead and did it. But we all struggle with that sometimes.
I hear, you know, all the statistics about how many people would come to church if we invited them, but maybe there's some that aren't ready to even make that step yet. So can we start the process, and what does that look like? We're going to talk confident faith today and about understanding how we can communicate our faith more effectively. And our guest has written and studied and spoken on this topic, taught for many years. He's an author, speaker, and evangelism strategist, best-selling author of books like The Questions Christians Hope No One Will Ask, with answers, and The Reason Why Faith Makes Sense. He's a co-author with Bill Hybels, Becoming a Contagious Christian, and he also developed with Bill and Lee Strobel, Becoming a Contagious Christian Curriculum, which has been translated into more than 20 languages and used to train more than 1.5 million people around the world. Mark Middleberg is our guest today, and the good news, we're going to talk about his latest book, Confident Faith, Building a Firm Foundation for Your Beliefs. Good news is that Mark's one of us.
How so?
Well, I mean, he's grew up in North Dakota.
Oh, okay.
I mean, now he moved, and he's living a place where there's actually a view. But we're going to claim him. Mark, good to have you back to Connecting Faith.
Hey, Neil, it's great to be back. And I think I am in the club, because the week my wife and I got married in North Dakota, the wind chill was 90 below zero. So that's got to count for something, right?
It should count for something, yes. So, and I guess, you know, the fact that you maybe moved, maybe that says that, you know, you've been continuing to learn as you've grown or something. So.
Don't tell my North Dakota friends.
No, we won't do that. So, by the way, we do have some copies of Confident Faith that we'll give away at the end of the hour, and we'd love to have you join the conversation as well for the question, or just sign up for a drawing for the book. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We're talking about sharing faith today and evangelism, apologetics. I'm wondering, Mark, you've been sharing and teaching this area for a long time. Are there seasons where engaging in spiritual conversations can be more natural or maybe better received? Is a week like this week a good time to be pursuing that?
Absolutely. You know, I think between all the things people hear, you know, or see on church signs and sometimes in the media, a lot of times the various news magazines and articles on the internet, you know, will emphasize questions about Jesus. Did he really rise from the dead? You know, why do Christians believe what they believe, and so forth? And I think that just kind of heightens people's awareness, like this week during the Easter week, that, you know, there's at least some pretty big claims about this man named Jesus. And I think it gives us a chance to say, what did you ever think about that? You know, there's this claim that the man died on a cross and rose from the dead 3 days later. What do you think? And or you know, you can ask them, do you and your family have any kind of religious traditions? Do you go to church? Do you have some kind of observance or practice? And not that, you know, you're not fishing for everyone to agree with you. You're just trying to open a conversation, because, you know, they may say, well, no, I quit going to church 20 years ago and I'm never going again. Well, then you've got just the opportunity to just very gently say, oh, that's interesting. What happened? and they then they go into their story, and you're off and running, because that's the goal, is to get off and running, to get the conversation started.
You know, I was looking in the book Confident Faith, and you suggest that, and I'm sure it's true, that, you know, most of us don't really research our belief system, what we believe, and, you know, compared to maybe buying a car or an appliance. So does that mean that we're more open to ideas about faith, or that we can be easily persuaded? And is that a good thing, or maybe not such a good thing?
Yeah, it depends, I guess, on who gets to you with which information
yes.
first. Because, yeah, I think we are a culture that tends to not have real firm convictions. And I'm not talking so much in the church now, but just out there, people kind of view it as a smorgasbord of, you know, possible options for, you know, religious nourishment or religious ideas, and they kind of view it as, you know, they're probably all about equal, or maybe they're all bad, I don't know. But I think when someone has that kind of an attitude, you can say, well, if they're all about equal, can I tell you about Jesus, and maybe you ought to consider him? In fact, I can give you reasons why I don't think they're all about equal. But yeah, I think people do tend to be pretty open, sometimes too open, and that makes them, you know, susceptible to bad teaching as well. But that's why we just need, as Christians and as the church, to be active. And as it says in Colossians 4:5, to be, you know, watching for opportunities with outsiders and making the most of every opportunity. And again, I agree, you know, this week is a great opportunity.
Has your approach, or maybe just the principles, changed compared to, say, you know, 10, 15, or 20 years ago?
You know, it's an interesting question. I think our culture has probably, well, certainly become more secular, meaning they don't just understand and agree with basic biblical ideas as much as they probably did then. I think we're in a generation that is less Sunday school trained or catechism trained or so. And so I think there is less understanding and certainly more relativism, where someone, you know, many people have the idea that we all have our truth, and I have my truth, you have your truth, and let's just all get along. But I don't know that that radically changes our approach. I think, you know, I still think what I wrote with Bill Hybels years ago and with Lee Strobel in the Contagious Christian materials, that, you know, generally speaking, we do best when we form a friendship or some, you know, even if it's on an airplane, at least, you know, be relational. Find out who the person is, where they're from, what they do, what they're studying in school, and then bridge from that and, you know, ask them if you ever think about spiritual matters, or, you know, it's Easter week, what does that mean to you, or does that mean anything to you? I think it's still that same approach, but then if they, you know, I just think you'll get more people who don't believe what you know, we believe as we would have 20 years ago,
sure.
But the approach is pretty much the same, I think.
It's hard to accept that we could be wrong, right? Isn't that one of the challenges? So how do we honestly evaluate our beliefs? I mean, if it's true that we don't really research our belief system, I mean, are we willing to even consider that we might be wrong or have grown up with some misunderstandings?
Yeah, I mean, that is really hard. And I think we have to be willing to say, you know, I could be wrong. I don't want to base what I believe just on a hand-me-down faith or a tradition, you know, kind of the attitude that, well, you know, my mom and pa taught me this, therefore it's got to be right. I think if we can model the fact that I'm a Christian not just because my parents were Christians, but because I've looked into it and the evidence points to this is where, you know, you mentioned the whole idea of being confident in our faith. I think that comes not just through more prayer and Bible study, but through really looking at the evidence. You know, this is Easter week, to look into the fact that the historical evidence powerfully points to the truth we believe. Jesus really did rise from the dead, and there's lots of good reasons to believe that, and skeptics who study it with an open mind often end up becoming Christians. And so I think when we go into a conversation knowing that kind of thing and having some reasons kind of, you know, in our back pocket, figuratively speaking, that helps us then to encourage the other person to say, I would urge you to be willing to kind of look at this and say, how do I know what I believe? Because none of us want to buy, you know, some religious package, some idea. We don't want to be sold something. Ultimately, I hope we all love truth. This is the way I talk to people. I want to be a lover of truth, not just some defender of a tradition I grew up with. And I think when I talk that way, they go, well, yeah, I want to love truth. I want. Well, then the question is, how do we know? And in my faith as a Christian, it's not a blind leap of faith. It's not just based on something I learned in, you know, catechism or Sunday school growing up. There are solid reasons that I believe Christianity is true, and I'd love to talk about them.
Mark Middleburg, my guest today. He's written several books, including The Reason Why Faith Makes Sense, The Questions Christians Hope No One Will Ask with Answers, and the book we're referencing today, Confident Faith, Building a Firm Foundation for Your Beliefs. And we'll look at, you know, some of the reasons from science, logic, history, archaeology, and experience, and more as we learn more about our solid faith. Glad to have you tuned in today. If you'd like to join us in the conversation, you can call us at 877-933-2484. Maybe you've gone through the curriculum Becoming a Contagious Christian and it has made a difference in your life. I'd love to hear that story. If you have a question or you just want to sign up for one of the resources, we've got some copies of Confident Faith to give away. It's a great book that will help you, and you can pass it on to a friend as well. Sign up for that with a phone call at 877-933-2484. Mark Middleburg, best-selling author, and he is a speaker and evangelism strategist, and he serves with Lee Strobel at the Institute at Cherry Hills in Denver, Colorado, talking with us today on Connecting Faith, and we'll get back to more in just a moment. Talking Confident Faith today, building a firm foundation for your belief. Mark Middleburg is the author, speaker, and evangelism strategist and best-selling author. And we're talking about ways that we can understand what it is that we believe and be confident of that. And no reason that we have to be timid. But I'm thinking, Mark, maybe we have to ask some of the hard questions. I think, you know, like you, I grew up in a home where, you know, church was a regular part of it. Faith was the conversation, but, you know, did I really sort of believe it all myself? Should we be questioning everything, or just take for granted that our parents and our pastors, that they've all worked through it, our spiritual leaders know what the issues are?
Well, I'm not trying to advocate for extreme skepticism about everything everyone says, but I do think, you know, the Bible's clear that we're to, you know, it says in 1 Thessalonians 5, we're to test everything and hold fast to that which is good. In 1 John 4, 1, John warns, he said, don't believe every prophet or every spirit, but test the spirits to see if they're from God, and so on. So I think, you know, the Bible's very clear that we got to be circumspect and to say, does what I, you know, what I was taught as a young person make sense? Is it true? And how do I know? And if I could kind of just give you a quick anecdote from my own life. In North Dakota, when I went to college, I had a professor who was actually a Protestant minister, but from a very liberal brand of that, you know, strain of that denomination he was part of. And it was an intro to philosophy class, but he would teach, he would say, there is a God, of course, but your traditional views of God are not right. And you're, you know, many of you, and that would include me, your confidence in the Bible, you know, it's based on a book that incorporated myths and is full of mistakes and contradictions. And he would just go on and on. And I realized then I did not have a confident faith. I had a very wobbly faith. And I also knew, even though I didn't agree with him, I knew I wasn't ready to stand up and say, well, my Sunday school teacher says this, or you know, the B-I-B-L-E, yes, that's the book for me. You know, and I still believed the Bible, but I knew I needed reasons. And so that really, God used that to launch me into what has become a lifelong search for better answers, so that my faith can be built on a bedrock of facts and information and not just a trust that my parents got it right. And that's what ultimately led to what I write about in this book, Confident Faith, where I give what I call 20 arrows of truth, which is 20 arguments from a variety of sources, science, philosophy, history, archaeology, biblical matters, and so on, that I think strongly point to the truth that Christianity can be trusted.
You know, in there I address several religious traditions that aren't really based solely on evidence. And I guess, think about those that pursue Mormonism. I mean, that there is something to be said for kind of consistency and accuracy, no matter what it is.
Absolutely. And I love Mormon people, but I firmly believe, based on lots of study and lots of conversations with Mormon people, that they have bought into a story and a theology that claims to be biblical, but does not pass the tests that the scriptures give us of examining to see if it's right. For instance, Galatians 1:8-9, Paul says, he says, even if we, another apostle or an angel from heaven comes to you and gives you a different gospel, let him be accursed. In other words, don't pay any attention, do not believe, do not follow him. Well, Mormonism comes teaching that they have 12 apostles and that their whole religion is based on the message of an angel who spoke to Joseph Smith back in the 1800s. The problem is he brought a different gospel. Joseph Smith came teaching that there are many gods and that God used to be a man and became God, and now we men can become gods. And that is certainly a different gospel. Even though they carry Bibles in their hands. And so that would be an example where you have to test this and say, this falls short of the biblical message. I cannot follow that.
So how do we counter, though, maybe the impression or the mystical experience? I sincerely believe I've had some sort of emotional experience, and so therefore it must be right. I mean, do we have to keep coming back to the Bible as our sole source? Maybe that's not recognized as a standard document.
Yeah, well, I think the Bible's part of the answer, and I think just plain evidence is part of it. I mean, just go back to the Mormon example. That is their main appeal, that Mormon missionaries will come to your door and say they read the Book of Mormon, they prayed, and the Heavenly Father revealed to them this is true. And it comes in various versions. I had a burning sensation, or I felt God's presence. I knew it was true. And yet, the scripture doesn't say that's how, you don't determine truth by burning feelings. And the Bible says to test all things and see if, is it a different gospel? It certainly is. But you don't have to only go to the Bible. Archaeology shows that the peoples that the Book of Mormon talks about in the Central Americas, there's no evidence for them historically or archaeologically. And the Mormon claim that the people in the Central Americas were of Jewish descent is refuted by DNA testing that shows that people in Central Americas are probably from Asian descent. So, I mean, there's secular evidence as well as biblical evidence that we can bring to bear to determine why, Orthodox Christianity makes sense and Mormonism doesn't. And that's just one example of what we can do with various truth claims that challenge Christianity.
In the book, Confident Faith, Building a Firm Foundation for Your Beliefs, you do talk about a number of these pointers, these arrows that point toward, reasons that we can be confident in our faith. Maybe we should just review a few of those. They're kind of in several broad categories. Let's talk about some of those.
Sure. I start with science, because I'm really aiming this initially at people who don't believe in God or kind of doubt the whole claim that there's a creator. So I go through some of the scientific evidence from, for instance, I start with design points to an intelligent designer. Watches need watchmakers, cosmoses need cosmos makers. And so we go into that argument. The next one goes into fine-tuning, the fact that there are at least 50 major areas that are fine-tuned to a razor's edge of precision so that life can exist. And you go, how did that happen? Did that happen by chance? The odds of that happening by chance, that everything was dialed in perfectly for us to exist, takes more faith, I think, than it does to become a Christian. I think the evidence points to the fact that there's an intentional fine-tuner that loved us enough to create the cosmos in a way that would support life. I talk about how DNA the information in DNA, which is mind-blowing, how that points to the fact that there was a, some kind of a divine encoder that put that information into every cell of our bodies. I talk about the origins of the universe, that they point to a divine originator, that, you know, the universe had a beginning, and whatever has a beginning has a cause. Therefore, there's some kind of cause outside the universe. Well, what that might that be? Good science and philosophy points to it being a non-physical being who is not bound by time, which sounds a lot like a guy I read about in Genesis. So, and then I go on to the moral argument. The fact that we all carry around a moral standard points to the fact that there's a moral lawgiver that wove that into the fabric of what it means to be a human. You know, we all have a moral sense, a moral compass, and we don't follow it very well. But the fact that it's there, we didn't invent that. That goes above and beyond us, and it points to a moral lawgiver. And then from there, I go into more detail on a lot of the evidence that points to the truth of the Bible. Should I? You want
sure.
Me to keep
yeah,
going
we got just a little minute or two before we take a break. Just because that is, we have plenty of evidence there that if we simply look at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Bible is consistent, even though it's, you know, 66 books written over 1,500 years. It's historically verifiable, and there's all kinds of secular sources that verify that it's true, and it stands up to historical scrutiny in ways that no other religious book does. It's preserved. We have thousands of copies of early manuscripts that show the reliability of the Bible, and especially the New Testament. If you can't trust the New Testament, you can't trust any work of antiquity. And then we have archaeological verification. We have fulfilled prophecies that are just, you cannot explain. How did 500 years before the birth of Jesus, how did Micah know that he'd be born in a little tiny village called Bethlehem? How did Isaiah know that the suffering Messiah would be pierced for our iniquities, as it says in Isaiah 53. He wrote that 700 years before Christ came, and hundreds of years before crucifixion had even been invented. And, you know, so how did he know that? Well, it sounds divine to me. I think God allowed the prophets to write history in advance. And those are just a handful of, I think, great and solid reasons. And I've got more, maybe after the break,
sure,
that we can go into. But we've got great reasons to believe what we believe when we hold the Bible and say, I trust in Christ.
Talking confident faith today, building a firm foundation for your beliefs. That's the title of Mark Middleberg's book. We've got some copies to give away. You can sign up for that at 877-933-2484. We do want to talk about how do we go about generating spiritual conversations. What does that look like? We want to be confident, but we also want to be engaging. We want to do it in a winsome way. We'll get some great insight from Mark, who has taught on this for many years and has developed the Becoming a Contagious Christian curriculum. Maybe you've used it. Love to hear from you if you have. 877-933-2484 is our phone number. If you have a question or a comment, you can join with us. Mark co-directs the Lee Strobel Institute at Cherry Hills in Denver and is joining us today on Connecting Faith. We'll take more comments in just a moment. Past the hour, we're talking about what we believe today and about building a firm foundation for our beliefs. The book we're referencing is called Confident Faith. It's written by author, best-selling author, speaker, and evangelism strategist Mark Middleberg. Mark has written a number of great books, including The Reason Why Faith Makes Sense, and he's developed a curriculum along with Lee Strobel and Bill Hybels, Becoming a Contagious Christian, which has been used to train literally millions of people. And we're getting some great insight today, and especially here as we open up Holy Week, some thoughts about how we can more winsomely maybe share the gospel message. But I'm wondering, Mark, before we maybe talk about that, and by the way, we do have some copies to give away. You can join us and sign up for a book at 877-933-2484. Mark, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about the rise of the nuns, those people that self-identify as sort of no kind of religious convictions. So it's kind of like they're not God and faith aren't even on the radar today. Is there more to it than that, or is it simply we're just not taking God into account anymore?
You know, I think there's a mix in that whole thing, and maybe I'll explain to make sure people understand. We're talking about N-O-N-E-S, nuns,
yes.
Not N-U-N-S, although there may be a rise of both. I'm not sure. but the rise of the N-O-N-E-S, nuns, I think it's a couple things happening. Certainly, as our nation has become more secular, there are people who have moved toward disbelief in God and atheism or skepticism or agnosticism. I think there's some of that, but the studies I've seen don't show a huge shift that way. I think part of what it is people who used to kind of be in the middle, they were nominal churchgoers. It was sort of stylish or sort of good for business. People kind of thought you were a weird neighbor if you didn't at least go to Christmas, you know, go on Christmas and Easter services. So I think what's happened is some of that in our culture has gone away, and in some cases is even the opposite, where it's sort of stylish to say, well, I don't do any of that. I'm not committed to any of that. So I think there's been a polarization where people in the middle have kind of become nuns, N-O-N-E-S. But I'm not sure that that means a lot of people have left the church or that tons of people have become atheists. But it does show that people are nominal about their beliefs and casual about it, and I think it just underscores the importance of what we're talking about today, Neil, that we as believers are called to, as it says in 1 Peter 3:15, be prepared to give an answer to these people, whether they believe nothing or whether they believe something different than you or whatever they believe. We're supposed to be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks for the reason for the hope that we have.
I was thinking about you know, how we go about creating an interest in that topic. I'm reminded of reading something years ago. It says you know the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And the point was, you can if you salt their oats. So how do we create some interest in this topic, or maybe just bridge some gaps to have a spiritual conversation?
You know, I think part of what we overlook is that, you know, in sharing our faith, in doing personal evangelism, I think we put too much burden on the feeling that we have to know what we're going to say, and I've got 8 points ready here, or 20 arrows of truth, or, you know, those kinds of things. And it's good to have some answers and some thoughts ready, but I think what we need to shift toward is more asking of questions of the other person, and then really listening to them. And I'll give you an example. Just, you know, here we are in Holy Week. Go back to what we said at the beginning of the show, that, you know, you can easily bring up, you know, it's Easter week. What does that mean, anything to you and your family? Or, you know, do you have any practices along those lines? And if they indicate, you know, I'm not religious, I don't really believe in this, or I'm not sure, what I often do, I use a line, I'll say, you know, I'm just curious, what do you think happened to Jesus' body? In other words, history tells us very clearly the tomb was empty. And by the way, secular historians, there's almost universal agreement that the tomb was empty, the body was missing. So I'm just curious, if you don't believe that God could have raised Jesus from the dead, you don't believe in Easter or the resurrection, what's your alternative theory? And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I guess I've never really thought about it. And, you know, it's an interesting question, though, isn't it? And you can just kind of lead them into that discussion. And because there aren't any good alternative theories, that's what makes this interesting. If they say, you know, the Romans stole the body or the Jewish leaders stole the body, well, that makes no sense at all. They're the ones that conspired to put him in the grave. They didn't want him out of the grave. Well, the disciples did it. Well, the disciples were freaked out and cowering, you know, in a little shack somewhere. I mean, they were scared to death. Peter had just denied he even knew Jesus 3 times and added a little cursing the 3rd time. I mean, he was certainly not in a good state of mind to say, I'm going to go and get past a bunch of Roman guards and roll a stone away and steal a dead Messiah and then pretend like a resurrection happened so I can be persecuted the rest of my life. See what I mean? The alternative theories don't take you anywhere, but that's what I think we can draw out by asking questions of other people and getting them engaged in thinking about it.
Is there maybe a second question then? I mean, maybe we think about the first question but don't know where to go after that.
Well, first of all, there's more evidence than just an empty tomb, and that's what really gets interesting is these followers of Jesus who have been taught by him over and over to have high integrity, to tell the truth, to love people and make love their highest goal, all of a sudden they unanimously are telling everyone they've seen the risen Jesus. He's appeared to us, not just once, but multiple times in various situations. He's talked with us. We've touched him. We've spent time with him. We even ate with him. So that would be another part of the Easter story to say, it wasn't just a missing body. But so now we've got appearances. And so what do we do with that? And just to say, I'll just tell you, for me as a Christian, I'm convinced that Jesus really did rise from the dead. And, you know, you think about it. If there really is a God of any kind, certainly raising a body out of a grave would not be a big deal to a God who can create the heavens and the earth. So I'm just trying to model. That's the kind of rationale I try to lead people into. And then if they ask some detail-y question that you don't know, you say, oh, that's a good question. I don't know. But I do know this, that if there had been a body in the tomb, the enemies of Christianity would have put it in a wheelbarrow and brought it out on the day of Pentecost and said, here's your Messiah that you want us to follow. Look, he's rotting. I mean, we can kind of go back to what we do know without making up stuff we don't know or pretending we know things we don't. And then, when they ask you a question you don't know, let that spur you into reading more. Read a book like My Confident Faith book or Lee Strobel's Case for Christ. Or, there's a lot of great material out there that'll arm us. But we just need to take a risk and engage in the conversations. And God can use us when we do.
You know, I was thinking, I know you addressed it a bit in the book Confident Faith, that, there are some people that don't believe because of maybe personal hurts. They've had a bad experience in some previous church or religious experience. So is there a way that we respond to or kind of be sensitive to that when we're having some conversations?
I'm glad you asked that. In fact, Lee Strobel and I became good friends with a prominent Muslim who became a Muslim out of a bad experience in a Christian school where he was abused. And that led to that. So when we hear that, or when I hear any story like that, what I do is try to let them tell the story. I ask questions. I say, tell me more. What happened? Oh, my goodness. How did you feel? Oh, well, did you try to talk to someone or tell someone? Oh, man. And what I find myself doing, and I think all of our listeners will find themselves doing, is you empathize with them, and not in a fake way, not in a manipulative way, in an honest way. I mean, what happened to my Muslim friend was really bad. And I agreed with him, and I said, if I'd gone through what you'd gone through, I might have turned to a different religion as well. And I get it, and I empathize with him. But then I gently, and you have to really be praying for wisdom from the Holy Spirit, but I gently said, what those leaders of that school did to you is totally polar opposite of what Jesus commanded them to do. They were not acting like Jesus. They were not obeying Jesus. They were what they did was evil and wrong. And Jesus Jesus agrees with you on that. And so I try to then begin to separate the bad experience they had from the true Jesus, the true teachings of Christ, and to get them to see, throw out the bathwater, but not the baby. Get Jesus is good. Jesus is beautiful. Jesus, and to help them to see that, and then to see, but people were doing bad things in his name. That's the approach. But the main point there is to get them to tell their experience, really listen. Don't jump in and try to start preaching. But really listen, empathize with it, and then as God leads, gently point out that's not what God's like.
Now, I heard someone say recently that the idea of being a spiritual seeker is popular today, but the minute you become a finder, that others become offended. Do we need to present answers, or do we just sort of stay with, with the right questions?
No, I think it's both and. I mean, again, 1 Peter 3:15 says, be prepared to give an answer. So I think one of the ways we engage people is with great questions and really listening, not just you know, pretending to be interested, but really listening. But then what that does is it gradually, it opens a person up and it earns their respect and trust so that then it kind of naturally can shift over to say, do you mind if I share what I've learned or what God's done in my life? And if you've just spent 15 minutes listening to their story, they're going to say, yeah, what? Tell me your experience or your story. The other thing, Neil, that I want to say, and this is based on lots of years of doing these things, I've learned that people in my life, or even just people I meet, are almost always more interested in spiritual matters than I would have guessed they would be. You know, now I'm not saying everyone's just craving a long conversation, but I'm just saying wherever we guess someone's at, they're probably more interested than we thought. And if we'll come on with gentleness and respect, as the end of 1 Peter 3:15 tells us we must, then they're going to be more open to our thoughts, our answers. But if we have to really come on gently and not, you know, I'm going to preach to you or, you know, you're headed for hell and let me, help, you know, yank you out of the flames here, but more of a respectful attitude, listening, you know, hearing their experiences and their beliefs, and then gently kind of shifting over to what Christ taught and what the Bible says.
Do we have a misconception that we don't share our faith because we assume people aren't interested? That's not true.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly wrong. And in fact, I know situations. In fact, Lee Strobel and I wrote a book called The Unexpected Adventure, and he tells the story about a neighbor that he kept hesitating to share his faith with because he just didn't think the guy was interested, didn't think he was interested, and all of a sudden the guy got a job transfer and he moved within a week. And this guy goes to another city, and a Christian shares Christ with him, leads him to Christ. And his question coming back was, why didn't you ever tell me about this? And, you know, Lee tells that story quite vulnerably and says it was a wake-up to me that I need to seize the opportunities. I need to, you know, again, as it says in Colossians 4:5, act with wisdom toward outsiders and make the most of every opportunity. And what you'll discover over and over is people, there's a lot of interest if we are people who will really respect them and listen to them too and not just come on like some, you know, street corner preacher who's just shouting at them.
Getting some wise counsel and encouragement today from Mark Middleburg. Mark's a best-selling author, speaker, and evangelism strategist. He has helped develop the Becoming a Contagious Christian curriculum. It's been translated in more than 20 languages, used by millions around the world. And Mark was in the leadership team at Willow Creek Association in Chicago for many years and now co-directs with Lee Strobel the Institute at Cherry Hills in Denver. Author of several books, including The Questions Christians Hope No One Will Ask, The Reason Why Faith Makes Sense, and we've got some copies of one of his new books called Confident Faith, Building a Firm Foundation for Your Belief. We'll give a drawing here at the end of the hour, give those books away, so you can sign up for that with a phone call at 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. And if you have a question or comment, we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. You can also find out more about Mark by going to his website. It's markmittelberg.com. That's MITTELVERG, markmittelberg.com. And we'll talk with Mark more in just a moment. Talking Confident Faith today with Mark Middleburg, opening up Holy Week to look at ways that we can winsomely be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have, to talk about Easter, to ask some questions, to build some relationships. Confident Faith is the book we're referencing. Mark is a best-selling author, and he's been teaching on apologetics and evangelism for many years, along with friends Lee Strobel. He co-directs with Lee the Institute at Cherry Hills in Denver, and joining us today, 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. Mark, just, you know, in my experience, I don't have many non-Christian friends. You know, that's not something I'm proud of necessarily. So how do I go about expanding my network? Because, how do we do that? And because we're not going to have the opportunity to share if we don't have friends to share with, right?
No, you're right, and that's a good point. And I think it's something a lot of us as Christians struggle with. I think we need to pray for more opportunities and watch for them. And some of those may be in the neighborhood, someone you've kind of just waved to as you pull into your driveway, but to reach out, to invite them to have coffee or invite them over for a meal. My wife and I have seen over and over just reaching out in our neighborhood when we moved to Colorado here, that just simple gestures of bringing over something, a snack or flowers to a new neighbor, how that can open doors. In fact, Lee Strobel was just telling me the other day, he and his wife just remembered that the way the whole process started with them spiritually was when they moved into a new apartment complex in Chicago, many years ago, and a woman made cookies and brought them over. And she was the cookies were the first, step in a friendship. She's the one who eventually led Leslie Strobel to Christ. And, of course, then Leslie invited Lee to her church, and that started the whole process with him. But it all went back to bringing cookies to a neighbor. So, that's something I think we all can do.
And do you, even in conversations, casual conversations, restaurants or airplanes, I mean, are you sort of always, your antenna's always up, you're always looking to keep probing and find ways to share, build some bridges?
Yeah, and, I don't force it on every person who happens to sit next to me. But, yeah, I'm praying and looking. And, sometimes it comes up in very natural ways. In fact, just day before yesterday, I was flying back from Dallas, Texas to Denver, and a young gal was traveling alone, and this blew my mind, but she said, she sat down, she asked my name, she asked the guy next to her, she was in the middle seat. And then she just said, "Do you guys ever feel lonely?" and I kind of gave a superficial answer at first and then got to know her better. But by the end, I gave her a deeper answer. I actually happened to have a copy of Confident Faith and gave it to her. But it led to a real conversation. 2 weeks earlier, I was talking to two women on a flight back from Florida, and they were both really into New Age kinds of meditation. But again, as I talked, they were at first interested, but the more they heard about what Christ really said and taught, they shut down. They didn't want to hear any more. But, they heard a little bit of truth to think about. So I think we just need to pray, like I say, and look for opportunities. And, Jesus said we're fishers of men. And you're in Minnesota. How many lakes you have up there?
Well, it's at least 10,000. So. And more if you count the swamps, yeah.
So a lot of fishing up there, mm-hmm. I know. And with fishing, you don't go out with a spear or a shotgun. You go out with bait and a hook, and at least when I was living up there, a bobber. And so you kind of see which fish is interested with some good bait. And I think it's similar when we're whether it's in an airplane or in the neighborhood or at school, coffee shop. To kind of just be looking and seeing, which spiritual fish are hungry, who's interested, and look for ways to bring it up. One, I don't want to forget to say, and that is one of the easiest and best is just a simple invitation, and no better week than this week, to say our church is going to do some really special services this weekend, and our family's going at such and such a time. Would you join us? We could pick you up. We could maybe have brunch afterwards. That kind of an invitation, I think you mentioned it earlier, a lot of people will say yes if you invite them. A lot more than we think are interested, especially around a holiday like Easter. And one study I saw years ago said 25% of people would go to church if a friend would just ask them. But the three-fourths, the 75% that won't, are now people who are candidates for a good spiritual conversation, because they may say, no, we do our own thing. Oh, I'm curious. What do you do? Where do you guys? What's your practice? And then that leads into a conversation. Or again, they say, no, I'm not into religion. And then you can say, oh, that's interesting. I'm not really either. I'm more into a relationship with Christ. But I'm curious, were you ever into religion? Well, yeah, when I was a kid, blah, blah, blah. And then you go, okay, well, what happened? Did something happen that made you not be interested anymore? Yes, when I was a teenager. And then they're talking. They're going into their story. So use invitations to your Easter service and or, you know, Christian movies. There's a bunch of them in theaters right now. God's Not Dead 2 is coming in a week and a half or 2 weeks, something like that. The Young Messiah, Risen, the movie Risen. I mean, there's just all these movies. They're all great opportunities to invite someone and then bring the, you know, bring that into a spiritual conversation.
Good word. Let's take a question. Jane in Woodbury called in and just asked, she said, my son has walked away from God, so how do you reopen that door of conversation with him? In addition to prayer, what else can I do? He's completely shut off about it.
Well, it's a serious question, and my heart goes out to Jane, but also I have some thoughts. In fact, I'll say real quickly, there's a chapter toward the back of the Confident Faith book where I diagnose 10 reasons people resist or don't have faith in Christ, and she may want to check that for some thoughts. But I go back to what I said earlier. I would try to get him talking rather than saying, you ought to go to church. You ought to do this. You used to believe. I would try to, in a very calm way, say, you know, son, tell me the story. What do you think about when you think about faith? You know, why did you used to be interested and you're not now? Did something happen? Was it? And she may know the answer to this, but I would get him talking about that. And then, you know, really try to be honest. I have a friend that loves to ask this question. He says, if you knew this was true, would you really want to know it? And the reason he asks that is some people kind of know, and her son might kind of know, this really is true, but right now he doesn't want to know it. In fact, when I was in high school, that was me. I could quote Bible verses, but I didn't want to hear them, because I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I thought I was having a lot of fun and so on. And so sometimes it's not an intellectual issue at all. It's a lifestyle issue, or like we said a few minutes ago, that maybe they've been hurt by someone or something. They've gotten some misinformation. But again, it's often lifestyle issues. And you know, for me, it was like, I just want to do what I want to do. And until I was willing to admit God knew for what was better for my life than I did, I wasn't open. And so if that's the issue, then you can give them 20 reasons. That's not going to help. You need to really talk about, you know, why do you think doing your own thing and disobeying what you know is right, why do you think that's going to work out better? Look how this plays out over time. You know, sexual freedom or, you know, abuse of alcohol or drugs. I mean, it may seem exciting for a season, but just look at the lives of people who go down that track and stay on that track. You know, I think God really loved us to warn us about where that leads. And that, you know, you talk more on that level than you do on the evidence for the resurrection.
Well, Mark Middleberg has given us some encouragement. I hope you've been encouraged as I have about, you know, this is something we can do. We can really care about people, ask questions. We can share spiritual conversations, and we can believe that God's going to do great work if we simply are surrendered to Him and praying up. You can find out more about Mark's writings and books and teaching at his website, markmittelberg.com, MittelBerg.com. Mark is a best-selling author of The Questions Christians Hope No One Will Ask, The Reasons Why Faith Makes Sense, also primary author of Becoming a Contagious Christian, a course which is used around the world. He co-directs the Institute at Cherry Hills in Denver. And joining us today on Connecting Faith, talking Confident Faith. Mark, blessings to you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. God bless and happy Easter.